You're listening to 99.1 WQRT LP Indianapolis, and this is Social Alchemy. This episode is part of the Social Alchemy Symposium, a participatory mini-conference that took place in New Harmony, Indiana. Conversations led by more than 20 notable authors, artists, designers, and philosophers from Indiana and around the world, exploring the role of utopian thinking. To listen to more archived episodes and find out more information about the Social Alchemy Symposium, please visit bigcar.org/utopia.
Glad to see a lot of you back, even though it's sunny outside. Hope you got a breath of fresh air. I'm Chris Merritt, landscape architect and principal with Merritt Chase, based in Indianapolis. We are talking about Columbus, Indiana, and New Harmony this afternoon. I'm here with Richard McCoy, Kent Schutte, and Catherine Armstrong. I'm going to do brief introductions, and then we'll have some panelist remarks, and then go into some conversation. Kent Schutte studied architecture at University of Cincinnati, served as redevelopment director for Lafayette, and began teaching at Purdue in landscape architecture from 1971 through 2018, nearly 50 years. Kent was my professor. Kent's first trip to New Harmony was in 1981. In 1995, Jane Blaffer Owen asked him to design the Cathedral Labyrinth and Sacred Garden, something we'll get a tour of tonight. He became a permanent resident of New Harmony in 2018, and he operates the Leather Leaf Inn, serves on the Blaffer Foundation Board of Directors, and is the president of the New Harmony Business Associates. Catherine Armstrong is an arts and culture leader and visual artist whose work is centered around making communities stronger through place-based activation and civic engagement. She's been the executive director of the Columbus Area Arts Council since 2016. During her time, she's increased access to the arts by developing innovative programs that connect artists to the community with workshops, pop-up performances, the 411 Gallery, Studio 207, and the 6th Street Arts Alley Project. Something we'll see a little bit of today in some images. She's an advisory board member of Historic New Harmony, and I know visits here often. And Richard is the founding executive director of Landmark Columbus Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to caring for, celebrating, and advancing the world-renowned cultural heritage of Columbus, Indiana. Richard has a long history of creating unique solutions to complex cultural heritage challenges. And I know has recently been coming to New Harmony often and studying New Harmony. So I'm going to try to frame this up a little bit just quickly and then let them kind of give their perspective. Why Columbus and New Harmony? We've talked about this a little bit and have a lot of, this could go a lot of different ways. But one of the things Richard said early on that I'm going to steal is that even though there's a lot of differences, there are some common themes here. And one of them is that it seems like these are two southern Indiana towns that have outsized legacies for not only what they're doing, but the state, perhaps even similar towns and cities throughout the country. And those stories need to be better told. They are relatively small rural towns on a river. There's the idea of kind of the patron and benefactor that has produced and kind of helped build the towns and believed in the value of good design and better quality of life. And the idea historically and even today, kind of the social aspirations behind that. You know, there's a lot of challenges around the identity and legacy of a place, its preservation of its heritage, population growth and decline, education. It was great to hear David Rubin this morning talk about the Envision Columbus framework plan. I think some similar things that New Harmony is dealing with, maybe at a different scale, but food access, an urban grocer, affordable housing, and then, you know, tourism, and of course, recently the pandemic and vacancy downtown. So with that, I'll maybe turn to Kent first to give some context on New Harmony and kind of your perspective seeing it here and how it's evolved.
Well, you've heard a lot of history about New Harmony, but I'd like to kind of give a few facts that relate to the scale and the legacy of the town. We all know there were three communities. Harmony started in Pennsylvania in 1804 to 1814. New Harmony, the second community from 1814 to 1825, And then they returned to Pennsylvania to economy, where they finally went out of existence in 1905 when the last harmonist passed away. New Harmony was the second of the three communities. It had 700 to 800 members. They had built in a 10-year period 180 structures, and they occupied 24,734 acres. So it was quite an established place. 20 books were written by foreign travelers that described New Harmony, and by 1824, Harmony commerce reached to 22 states and 10 foreign countries, and they were busy. They ate five times a day, okay? They had a light breakfast between 6 and 7. They returned for lunch at 9. They then had dinner at noon, and they had a vesper brote between 3 and 4. And then they had their supper in early evening. So they got a break from, they did 2-hour work, and then they ate, then they worked, and then they ate, then they worked, and then they ate. So it wasn't too bad. Father Rapp decided to leave for a lot of reasons, and convinced, they signed agreements. So when he was ready to make a big move, they had to sign up again and agree to move to economy, which they did. And then Robert Owen got wind of this place, and he was the enabler. He was the guy that made the big move with his four sons, and daughter, but he teamed up with William McClure, who we met in Philadelphia. And so you have Robert Dale Owen, William Owen, David Dale Owen, Richard Owen, and Jane Dale Owen, all following their father here and becoming producers. And William McClure was also an enabler, but a producer. He brought an entire boatload of knowledge with him. And his passion was education and geology. So he had Madame Frédégé, Thomas Say, Joseph Neef, Charles Alexander Le Sueur, and many others that came here to develop a new educational system, which they intended and did spread across the country. And they fell apart in a 2-year period, but many of the producers stayed, so the community. And from 1827 to 1941, the town didn't die. The town was still doing things. You had John and Jacob Schnee, who were important. You had James Elliott, John Beale, Thomas Mumford, Martin Bella Gordon. I mean, they took one of the dormitories and turned it into a theater, and ran an important theater production company here for many years, which was an amazing change to a building that was looked like number two dormitory. You had John Rabiere, who became a very wealthy pork producer and incredibly important guy, who bought the Tavern Hotel and tried to hang on to it. Dr. Edward and Sophia Murphy, they built the Working Man's Institute structure. I mean, that was something that happened after everybody left. And Murphy Auditorium and Murphy Park. And Mary Fauntleroy, she was the that bought, you know, had the Fauntleroy house. She bought number two dormitory. She was trying to kick this town into realizing what an enormous legacy was in place here. And then in 1939, the state jumped in and we're going to do this memorial. And the memorial spanned blocks. It was going to kind of like be a frozen Williamsburg. And the town went ballistic. They didn't like it. Kenneth Owen particularly didn't like it because they were not taking very good care of Mary Fauntleroy. They took her house away from her in her number two dormitory and were going to build a memorial. And that didn't go over too well. Well, in 1941, Kenneth married Jane Owen. And they were married in Ontario. And they were on their way back to Houston, and he brought her through the town, and sparks flew. She jumped on as a serious enabler. So In 1939 to 1940, the collapse of the State Memorial Commission occurred, and soon after that, Jane landed and formed the Robert Lee Blaffer Foundation and started doing things, started buying things. Kenneth was buying things. He had his own money, and he didn't have as much as she had, but he was capable of making a difference. And so, but Jane didn't have enough money. And so she had two other enablers that she pulled into the scheme of things. One was Eli Lilly. She said, come on, Eli, help me here. He said, Jane, I can't help you. You're too rich. And then she went to Roger Brannigan, who was the governor, who was a great historian. And she said to him, come on, kick that commission back into business and restore these buildings. And he did. He kicked it into commission. And after he got off of a four-year term as governor, he was put on the board of Lilly Endowment for 2 years until he passed away. He would have been on longer, had he. So here we are. We got Roger Brannigan, and we got Eli Lilly, and Lilly's balking, so Josephine Elliott says, let's form a not-for-profit. Let's form Historic New Harmony, Inc. Let's get a 501c3. So she wrote the document, and Brannigan got it approved. It went to the feds. It got approved. Lilly said, ah, now I can help you. So he said, let's get started with a grant of $3,535,900. The next year in 1975, put this in context, he said, okay, Lilly, I'll give you another $2,275,000. And then the next year in 1976, well, we're back up to $3,750,000. Whoosh. You realize how much whoosh that is? So in a period between 1972 and 1986, Lilly Endowment invested over $15 million in this town of 735 people.
Yeah.
And there were, the buildings were here to restore. And so what did that do? Well, that brought Evans Woolen, Philip Johnson, H. Roll McLaughlin, Robert Hatch, Rosie Braz, Richard Meyer, to the town to work. Landscape architects, Thomas Kame, Robert Zion. There were over 23 artists that made significant contributions to the collection here. And a very Lauren Dunlap, James Rosati did the bust of Tillich. There are only three busts that he ever did. Simon Verity, Jacques Lipschitz, Ralph Bayer, the stonecutter from Canterbury Cathedral, William Duffy, David Rogers, John Chase Clark, Stephen DeStabler, Toby Kahn, Harold Witherspoon. So, you know, there was this tremendous effort that went into it. And in 2010, the third experiment passed with Jane. And so now we're in the next experiment that started in 2010, and we're getting started. It was, when she passed, it was kind of like Christ and the disciples. We kind of wandered in the wilderness for a while. Oh my God, what are we gonna do? Well, that was 12 years ago. And a lot of great things have happened in the last 12 years. There's a lot yet to do. So one of the things, so that kind of gives the background. In the process, the Blaffer Foundation has many of these sculptures. And I tried to find somebody. I called my friend Sharon Theobald, who's an art appraiser, who was head of the Lafayette Art Museum. And she knows everybody in the world. And I said, I need someone to come to New Harmony and help inventory the collection of the foundation. And she said, oh, no question. It's Richard. I know he loves the town. And he worked at IMA, and he did a tremendous job, so give him a call. So I did. He said, be there, pro bono. And that was the hardest Saturday.
I thought it was fun.
Well, yeah. keeping up with him, you know, photographing everything, moving around. What was this? What was that? And we put together the book, and that's how we had our first connection to Columbus. And since then, he's come and help sort out other organizational issues in town. I haven't had a chance to work with you directly, but she's been sneaking around here quite a bit. She comes in and out. She doesn't tell anybody. And so it's, but between the two of them, Columbus is connected in very special ways to New Harmony. So.
Well, thank you for that, Kent.
7 minutes.
Maybe we'll start, Catherine, with a little bit of what you're doing when you're sneaking around in New Harmony. But your professional work, personal interest in New Harmony, and the value of, I think, you know, Kent, you talked about the kind of significant art in New Harmony and the kind of meaning of arts and culture and preserving and building community. I know you have some slides. I can flip through them if you...
Sure. Thanks, Chris. And it's really hard to follow Kent here, but delighted to be here this afternoon with all of you. A couple of different hats that I wear as I sit up here. Yes, the executive director of the Columbus Area Arts Council. I'm also a fairly new, a year or so, advisory board member of Historic New Harmony. And I'm an artist, and I'm very interested in New Harmony as a place, but also its connection back to Columbus and how there is this potential for a cultural exchange between the two places. And I've been really sort of fortunate that I get to be chosen by New Harmony, right? Mm-hmm. As it chooses you. That's what Connie told me. You got slides? Oh, okay. So I won't go into every sort of detail of what the Arts Council does. Every Arts Council is different. Every community is different. But I will just sort of highlight a few things that we've done recently and some things that also connect to artists here in New Harmony, DOCE being one of them. So this image is a image from last year. We celebrated phase one of the 6th Street Arts Alley that we implemented with the local design firm Law Office. They were also responsible for the mural on the side of the gallery 411 that we opened several years ago. And the Arts Council's office sits across the alley in a carriage house that is owned by our community foundation that we rent. So this has become sort of an arts hub. Landmark Columbus Foundation is on the opposite side of the 411 gallery. And so it's a great way to sort of bring literally these different cultural organizations together. One of the things that we wanted to be able to do with the 6th Street Arts Alley, and I would sort of define this as this place-based activation, which we've talked quite a bit about that today, is to bring folks to a central place to connect, celebrate sort of being together, if you will, and also to be able to talk about art and design in a way that would be sort of really hyper local, but it could also connect back to the notion that Columbus has been a destination for all sorts of creative thinkers, architecture and design, and sort of what did that look like today. I think maybe Chris or David Rubin mentioned something about, you know, paint being a really sort of cheap way to do something, right? And also something that I'll sort of add to it that everybody can kind of get involved with, right? You can invite a lot of people to help build a project when it's something, you know, a paintbrush and a can and a weekend that we actually installed that project. We also wanted to, when we closed the street down for the 6th Street Arts Alley, have this sort of portable seating next to the office. I gave up my parking spot so we could turn that into a pop-up park that could exist when the street was not closed, not an event. And I would say that Columbus is really good at planning and thinking about things in a very intentional way, but it's very difficult for Columbus to sort of loosen up to something kind of grassroots. So this is really sort of a different way for Columbus to think about how do you activate place? How do you respond to architecture? How do you bring artists together? Now this you'll see, we have DOCE Lewis's work here at 411. And part of the idea around this gallery that the Ephraimson family helped make happen because they put in sort of the lead gift. And often when that happens and other people trust, you know, you can match that, right? On the development side. But one of the things that we wanted to have happen with 411, if you kind of back up before it became the Sixth Street Arts Alley, that there was a community arts gallery and cultural space to exhibit work by local, regional, and artists who are coming in nationally or internationally to Columbus. At the time, it doesn't mean that Columbus never had a gallery, but there was not an art space where artists could, again, connect with each other, talk about their work beyond sort of art in a coffee shop, art in a visitor center, art within a school. And it's really kind of hard to believe that that didn't, you know, that it wasn't there at that time, because Columbus is thought of as, again, a very sort of intentionally designed arts community. But sometimes you have to kind of, you know, sort of disturb things a little bit and try something new. So this started as a pilot, and now it has become a program of the Arts Council. So we manage it.
Got it.
Yes. Mitzi Davis, who is part of the New Harmony Clay Project. This is sort of an interesting thing about New Harmony. Sometimes it comes into your life when you don't know that it's in your life. Mitzi and I actually met in 2017 in Denver on a bus, because I said I lived in Columbus, Indiana, and she said, ooh, I live in Evansville, Indiana. And the conference was about artist residencies. So this will later sort of come into play. And so when my first trip to New Harmony was in 2019, finally Mitzi and I were able to meet in person. And I absolutely love the concept of the New Harmony Clay Project. In fact, last night when we were sort of walking around in the evening, there's an artist in there working. And I think this is also a very important piece to New Harmony. It takes work very seriously, so does Columbus. But New Harmony, you can actually see people making. That's not always sort of the case with Columbus. It's kind of this thing that is sort of a private space. But last year we were able to bring Mitzi Davis in to lead a workshop in another program space called Studio 207. This is very important to the Arts Council, this access piece that anybody can be creative. And then again, we can have this exchange with other artists just 3 hours away, actually 2 hours and 45 minutes, if you want to be exact. So yeah, so this was that workshop. And then the last piece, just on this personal side of the work that I do as an artist, it's very difficult to subtract that from the work that I do from the Arts Council, because you can't sort of take off your lens that you view through from if you're trained as an artist or you think creatively. New Harmony has just been a gift for me as a place to come to retreat. I've done a couple self-directed residencies. And so one of the things that I like to do when nobody knows that I'm here is wander around, take photographs, very influenced by the sort of quiet spaces within New Harmony and how that changes throughout the different seasons. And so this is just a very quick photo from my self-directed residency at the Mother Superior House last spring.
Should have gotten that hose out of the way.
Yeah.
We should have had that put away. That shouldn't have been there. So.
That's great. Richard, could you give a kind of summary of your work in Columbus and what you've been seeing recently in New Harmony and kind of comparing, contrasting the two?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Kent and Catherine. It's great to be here and to be on the panel. Kent and I have talked about the differences between Columbus and New Harmony, and a little bit with Catherine and others, and I think Jeremy. And you know, it's such an interesting comparison between these two cities. And you know, I think what you were saying early on is, you know, seeing so many arts leaders from around the state here in New Harmony, it's really inspiring to think that people are coming here, and it's because they want to be here. This is a really special place in Indiana and the world. And I think that sometimes it's the same as Columbus. It's a really special place in the world. And, you know, to have the opportunity to work in Columbus and to be here is really an extraordinary thing. But they have a similar kind of destiny and timeline in the modern era, you know, in that here you have this dynamic leader who has a lot of resources and pull, and she passes away, and the town, as you mentioned, you made a religious reference that you're sort of out in the wilderness, which makes sense, right? Like, what do you do with all of this stuff when this person leaves? Do you keep going with it? Do you leave it alone? You don't want to mess it up. And it's a similar thing that happens in Columbus. There's this dynamic family that's there, and they pass by the early 2000s. And I started working seriously in Columbus around 2008, and then a little more seriously until 2013. But you could feel in the town, there's the same kind of sense of being in the wilderness. Like, what do we do? Oh, we don't want to screw this up. This is, you know, like, there's all this great stuff. We better look after it. How do we look after it? You know, all these very similar questions, I think, between the two communities. And it's, you know, I was here at the 40th anniversary of this building a couple years ago, just before the pandemic, and there was this great feeling in town that this was like the fourth wave, right? Mm-hmm. Is that there was something happening, and I think that's still here, but it's this idea that this town really, and the people that are here have the opportunity to lead and to move that forward. And I think that's the same feeling you have in Columbus, is you do now have a group of people in Columbus that are coming together and working and doing more and activating these spaces. And I think that's I don't know if there are, you know, two communities in Indiana that have had such dynamic leaders that made such a huge impact in their community. And the impact has a kind of shared sense of values, I would argue, is that they both deeply loved the place. And so I think, you know, when we think about the values of our organization, and I'll talk about that briefly, but, you know, it's that we love Columbus. You know, that's the first thing. And so I think you would say here, we love New Harmony, you know. And the other thing that we'd say about Columbus is that design shapes our lives for good or bad, right? If you think about going around town here, it's that all of this built environment shapes our attitudes, how we think about things, what we think about. And then the third one is that we can do more if we work together. And that's the heart of the New Harmony story back to, you know, 200 years ago. It's this group that's working like bees and pretty super productive. And so, you know, I think this is a similar story in Columbus. There's this great history of working together to do more for the common good. And it's kind of moves out of like a notion of private residencies, or it's really for the public good. It's investing in schools, investing in civic places, parks, all these things that we share as humans to make a better city. And so I think there are these sort of analogies to it. But just to very briefly say about our organization is that we started working on this seriously around 2013. It was a time when there was a different mayoral administration in the city, and the mayor, she was asking with a group of people in town, like, you know, what should we do? How do we start caring for this heritage? And so eventually we moved this project out of the city and moved it into the community foundation. In Columbus, we have a really strong community foundation. And then from there in 2019, we created a standalone nonprofit organization that has the mission we talked about earlier. But one of the things that we really think a lot about is that mission, and it's really caring for the heritage. You know, it's really trying to be helpful to that, and growing a group that cares about it. It's not all our job. And then two is to celebrate it, to really be proud of what Columbus is about, in the same way New Harmony is really proud what New Harmony is about. And the third one is a bit different, and that's thinking about advancing it. And so, you know, I think about this a lot. There's a, you know, a really famous person from Columbus named J. Irwin Miller, who did a lot of things. But one of my favorite quotes that he gave is that he's looking back to some of the great architecture of the Renaissance. And he says, you know, you have to look at those buildings because they exist today as being well built and forward thinking because they're still around. And he says, you know, if you were to make copies of them today, if you just repeat what the past was doing today, it shows that you have no creative ideas of your own. He says to really to honor the past and to think about the past, you have to care for it, but you also have to be bold in your day to honor the past and to take a bigger risk as your ancestors did before you. it's a really interesting idea in New Harmony, because New Harmony has these people that have made these bold civic investments, these bold ways to live, and been radical in thinking, living together, being abstinent, and, you know, all of these fascinating ideas. And so it's like that question, I think, that is the same in Columbus as it is here, is what is the bold move? You know, and so what is, how do you respect the past by being a risk taker today? And so it's, again, it's just interesting to see so many people I admire and in the state thinking today. I mean, we're in a state that is not super well known for its arts culture, to put it in a certain way. And it's a place that is constantly thinking from an economic perspective, how do we get more cultural leaders into town? And I think that it's New Harmony in Columbus that can really be shining examples for the state to see how things happen. And it's not just about these extraordinary philanthropists that funded a lot of it. It's about a community working together. But the philanthropists matter quite a lot. You know, I think this is what's really been amazing about both New Harmony and Columbus is you have extraordinary people that have not only given of their cash, but just as important, they've given a lot of their time, a lot of their talent. You know, Kent talks about, you know, Kent does a lot of volunteer work. So I know many people here in town that are constantly volunteering, giving of their time, giving of their money. But it's what makes a community come together. And I think there's a lot of analogies for that. And Kent, Chris, I'll end on just one other thought. I think the big differences between the two towns, because they're so connected with the notion of architecture and design as part of the civic identity and the civicness of the place. But I see New Harmony almost as like a, I think of it as like a place that's connected to like a sense of being ancient. And is, if you think about here, there's these Indian burial mounds over here. There's this river that is sort of this never-ending bit of time going through. And it's every time I've been here, I heard people on their lips, you hear the word George Rapp, who was here 200 years ago. And we're still talking about George Rapp, a guy who thought the world was coming to an end. But, you know, he's the guy that we talk about. It's amazing. And so you have this extraordinary connection to time and history here in this kind of, I think, an ancient way, whereas Columbus's history is not ancient, but automotive. You know, it's about the modern times. It's about how the diesel engine changes America and changes capitalism. And it's about modern with a capital M in Columbus. And so I think the places are similar. And I love them both. And I hope that this whole symposium allows us to continue to think about these things. Sorry for the ramble, Chris. I don't know if that makes
sense. That's great. No, okay. Thank you. We love Columbus or New Harmony. Design shapes our lives. We can do anything if we work together.
Something like that.
Maybe not anything, but okay.
We can do more if we work together.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. It's this idea. It's not just like, it's truly finding shared goals, right?
Yeah. Right.
Ken, you talked a little bit about enablers and producers. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What's happening in New Harmony and finding shared goals, shared values?
Well, we have a lot of producers, and we have probably a handful of enablers. What we got to do is get them to all agree to do something together. But what I was going to contribute now was, if you closed your eyes and you thought about Columbus and you thought about New Harmony, how do you define a cultural town? And we worked on this for 5 years through symposiums, and I just read a list of what the group came up with. Timelessness, security, an intentional community, has value for all mankind, cultural activity, the arts, it's unique and authentic, it's a place to work and to study, and it's a living community. It's not a museum. And Jane always said, New Harmony is a flowing river and not a stagnant pond. And so you have to keep moving. We had a meeting at 11 this morning. There was a rumor that the Catholics were going to tear down the little church, the little Catholic church. And so we called a meeting, and Father Ed came to the meeting, and so did about 35 other people. And we left the room feeling Martha, you'll agree that, you know, that we made progress here today, and Connie was there, and I think all's well, and as long as the bishop goes along with it. But so, I mean, so those are all examples, you know, there are a lot of examples of how we try to bring the whole community together. We had, before the COVID-19, we had an amazing community dinner in Main Street. And the block of merchants on Main Street all contributed the meat and the drink. They invited the whole town, and guess what? The whole town showed up. Every group was represented there, from the town council to all the various organizations. And unfortunately, COVID broke that, but it's going to come back. And we eventually had the table at the first time we did it was straight. The second year we did it, we had to zigzag it and do two tables to get it all in the block. I don't know what we'll do next time. Mm. But so I see progress in a unification of, and there were some real reasons why there was disparity here. I mean, we had two attempts to really take major chunks of the town and make them like Williamsburg and make them not a real community. And I think that the town wasn't ready for that, but that's all faded away now. And now we just got to hang on to what we've got, which is a lot. Amazing physical challenges to all the nine organizations. We've got nine 501c3 foundations or trusts that all own significant property independently. So it's quite a group. I don't know.
It does seem like the, you know, part of the challenge is to, you know, not just advancing by maintenance and keeping what you have, preserving what you have, in addition to taking that big risk and thinking about what's next.
Yeah.
I know that's a challenge in both Columbus and New Harmony. Could you talk a little bit about kind of your different organizations and maybe what you're doing to maintain the heritage that's there in addition to kind of advocating for what's next?
Yeah, well, we're trying to expand the pottery studio, which is the New Harmony Clay Project. Now we're on a hold, but we haven't stepped backwards. We're just holding. But the idea there was the original building was built for teaching and exhibition. And then we started the Clay Project, which is an artist in residence program. And we have up to three artists at a time in that little building. Well, now there's no place to teach and there's no place to exhibit. And the idea was to add a little bit to the back of the building for storage and a program office, but to actually build three artist in residence studios that kind of mimic the overlook of a roofless church so that the artists would have their own private space looking towards the river, and they'd have their own studio, which, you know, we can get them out of the other building, and now we can exhibit and we can teach. And we have the concept plans completed, and next step would be to move into the construction drawing phase so we can figure out how much it'll cost and then go after people to raise the money to implement the plan. And it involves bringing back the qualities of the original Richard Meyer design, which is not what's there now, and adding this new component. So I think that, if you ask me what's the big project that we could move forward on, it would be that. And we just have to get back at it. But New Harmony has to figure out how to achieve excellence and remain small. How do you achieve excellence and remain small? How do you resist bigness, greed, and speed? You have that problem too, but you're already bigger than we are by a large shot. So, you know, everyone was against our general, you know, because that was our chain that came to town. But my God, you know, you need a quart of milk or you need a can of pickles, and you know, you don't want to drive all the way to Mount Vernon. Now, all the big stuff you can get, you know, if I want a salmon from Pike Place Market, Pike Place Fish, I can call them up or text them and it'll be here on ice and tomorrow. I can go to Amazon and I can get anything. So I don't have to be in New York to shop at the big expensive store. The big expensive store is here tomorrow morning. And so the technology works for you, but it works against you. And But the artist in residency, the idea of this becoming a sabbatical village where groups of people come and engage each other across disciplines, from poetry to painting to ceramics, and actually recharge, which is, anyway.
Are Columbus and New Harmony thinking about, you know, in the pandemic and the kind of remote work and that kind of our new normal and being able to work from home and that enabling people to be more mobile and you know, initially some people kind of moving away from the big city, Columbus in particular, people maybe shifting from Indianapolis and seeing more opportunity in Columbus, but are Columbus and New Harmony thinking of that?
Well, you're go ahead. Your 2-year exhibit.
Yeah. I saw some data that Bartholomew County, the population did increase last year. But, you know, I think the statewide trend that we see for population is that in large part, the rural communities are withering at the vine. Indianapolis is growing. There's a few metropolises in the state that are growing, but generally the rest of the state, the population is either staying the same or declining. And so, you know, Columbus is unique. It has a thriving manufacturing industry, advanced manufacturing industry. I think New Harmony will remain to be challenged to see if, you know, as its current population continues to age, to see, you know, if it can find growth. And I know there is some growth here, but I think it'll be challenged. And I think that's also kind of a preservation challenge. Your earlier question was talking about that. And I think of this building. I was here a couple years ago with Dan Mason, and I'm sure Claire's here. Hi, Claire. Who responsible for this building. I mean, this building is it's a non-trivial expense to maintain. Would say it's, yeah, that's one way to put it. You know, I know it has serious roof needs. It has all of these things. And if you think about the roofless church and these other things that are, will eventually have concerns. And it's the same as in Columbus. There's many properties now that are 50 years old, and that's really a mark for buildings when they often need a lot of work, and they get challenged if they're going to go for another 50 years or not. And so Columbus is really asking itself a lot of questions about some of its buildings now, if it has the resources to care for them and to keep them going. And I think it's the same thing that will happen in New Harmony. It'll be interesting in New Harmony because there's, you know, many people that have decades-long connections to this place, and they understand why this building really matters. But if you think about the 22-year-old who's not here today, are they going to care about this? Are they going to be the person that fights for this building in 10 or 15 years? Are they going to understand the roofless church and care for it? In Columbus, we have a number of significant properties, 2 National Historic Landmarks that are challenged now. We're working away on them. But it's this kind of question: how do we not only get folks that have resources invested in them, but the question that we've been struggling with as an organization is how do we get the next generation to see why these buildings matter? And so Kent mentioned this program that we do called Exhibit Columbus, and this is this exploration of community architecture, art, and design that culminates with an exhibition of temporary, we'll call it public art. So it's these installations around town. But we purposely work with high school students. So we've been doing this for 6 years, and we now have this sort of steady stream of high school students that we work with that are engaged with the architecture and design of the community. And, you know, my dream is in 20 or 25 years, some high school student who was in Exhibit Columbus is our board chair, you know, is involved with our organization, and they care about it. And so I think this idea of creating a circle and a way for a community to continue to advance is, it takes a lot of thought and planning by connected civic leaders. And you all here have a lot of connected civic leaders. Mm-hmm. Who are thinking about that. And Columbus will often get together and think about these things, but it's there's no magic wand to make it all work.
Maybe the last one just before we open it up to the audience, but you talked about Exhibit Columbus as, maybe for lack of a better term, public art, and the ability for those designers to kind of have a role in thinking about the city, kind of rebuilding and building the city. And Catherine, I'm curious, with the 6th Street Arts Alley, I don't know if Daniel and Lulu would call that art, but bringing, you know, doing kind of public art in this kind of placemaking work outside of the gallery, is that something with the Arts Council you're looking to do more of and thinking about with Columbus?
Yeah, so we implemented phase one. We have a phase two to that project that we're working on this year. I just want to circle back to something. You know, we've talked a lot about buildings and caring for these historic landmarks and things, of course, tied to place and that parallel. But I think the other sort of piece that's important to this in terms of like thinking about the future is really what's happening today. It's like you also have to invest in the people. You know, you need to sort of care for people and to be able to give them sort of an opportunity to be creative. You asked about this question of like, where do people want to live? I think certainly quality of life is important in both New Harmony and Columbus. And having sort of lived and worked in Columbus for 6 years now, and I was reminded by this earlier when David Rubin was showing the plan of Envision Columbus. So that like grocery store has never happened, I just want to say. Really great rendering, but this is also, I think, sort of a trap sometimes too, where you can sort of over plan things around.
Not yet.
Okay. This is not a critique of Land Collective. But this is what I want to sort of circle back to is I've thought about this, and I mentioned this today after we were reminded again of that plan. Obviously a different time, right, in the world. But how could we invest in something as a pilot or something, again, that is experimental? Let's try something and see if it works. And I think that was also like the mentality around 6th Street Arts Alley. Right? Because you could pave that street again, right? The gallery could move out. We rent that space. Where might we put the urban grocer, if you will, in a space on Washington Street that's closed or vacant, which again, I know this is hard for Columbus to hear. We do have vacant buildings, right? Or empty storefronts. How can you sort of make that into a creative space? And I think this is one of the things that Big Car's done really well, is they've moved in and out of different neighborhoods. I was a grad student in Indianapolis. I lived there for 8 years, and I was a student who worked with Big Car on a lot of different projects. Ann Laker and I were talking about the Saraga Market project. You know, there are things that you can do. Again, I just want to emphasize this investment in creative people and thinking to activate spaces, to activate buildings, beyond sort of a big urban plan. Maybe that's also a way to kind of jumpstart some of the things too, while somebody's working on preservation and those other pieces. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Well, we have a few minutes left. Any questions from the audience?
Repeat it.
I'm thrilled with that question. I was not what I was expecting you to say, Marsh. Folks that didn't hear it, he said it's what's interesting about both these places is they don't have a prescriptive program for preserving architecture. And so there's about 50 historic preservation commissions in the state of Indiana. Columbus, I think I would easily argue, has the most significant architecture pound for pound in anywhere in the state and probably the region. And it doesn't have one either. And so it's done a pretty good job of caring for its heritage. And this is a non-traditional way to do it. And New Harmony also doesn't have any ordinances that would protect any of its architecture.
No, we do.
Oh, there's ordinances?
Well, it's in the planning commission. We have a planning commission.
And are there buildings that are landmarks?
You have to get a demolition permit to take down buildings on the National Register.
Okay.
So there is a process. Now, whether that process has strong leadership that would, you know, bite is the question. Yeah. My house would have been torn down by the Christian church, but the town planning commission would not give them a demolition permit. So they had to keep it, and then they sold it. So there could be a strong structure if we had strong commissioners. It all goes back to how much grit the...
Well, I think it's like what Catherine was saying, is that how do you invest in people? Mm-hmm. And I think about preservation or new arts and culture in the state, I think where Indiana is challenged is that there's not a lot of I think it's, what's the right way to say this? We need more arts administrators that know how to do fun and interesting programs and events. You know, I think if New Harmony had somebody here or three people here that was programming arts and events, I bet it could, within a couple of years, probably start to make really decent money. I mean, it's a really extraordinary place. You have 9 venues to do stuff. I mean, if you were programming this thing and doing really interesting contemporary stuff, it, you know, you might be able to achieve your goals. And I think it's as similar as Columbus. We could probably in many cities in the state, if you had more cultural programmers, people doing art stuff in those cities, I think they could all be quite busy and with after a few years be very successful. And I think it's the same analogy with preservation. It takes a while, but I think the strategy in Columbus has always been advocacy and education. You know, it's to say, how do we educate people? How do we do fun events that let them know the building's cool? How do you keep using it? Finding ways for it to be interesting, create a network of people that are watching the buildings, trying to connect with influential people who are the decision makers for these things. And it's really about being active and alive. And so this idea of investing in people is really, I think, the core of what every community needs and what we need more of across the state is more arts administrator, more arts culture people that are doing stuff and not just okay. I mean, doing stuff at a national level, doing things. I mean, this symposium is as good as anybody's doing anywhere in America. I mean, congratulations to Big Car. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's here in New Harmony. And so, but we need to be doing these in almost all the cities and thinking about how, what we're doing with arts and culture, how we're growing these things, how we're having more humanities, more art, more preservation. So I think the answer to the question, Marsh, is like, how do you think about those things is, you know, more times 10. Yeah. Does that make sense?
That's great. Thank you. I know we have to run to dinner. So if you have more questions or comments, please come up. But any last remarks or thoughts from the...
Well, I would close with a brief reading of something. The Right Reverend George MacLeod, funerary of the Abbey at Iona, Scotland, on one of his visits to New Harmony, stated in a prayer of dedication at the Orchard House, so we ask further to build this house that it's very... atmosphere inspires faith in changing residencies and gender hope, and its fellowship breeds love. And we ask you to build a commune around it, a city obedient, courageous, and cooperative, vibrant with the sound of a new harmony, where the old may find comfort, the middle-aged recover vision, and the young find courage. So
thank you.